few minutes to get settled or a few seconds to get settled. I'll remind you each that you have 15 minutes for your argument. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you state your name, identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And with that, when you are ready, we are ready to hear your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Susan DeVos. I'm an assistant Blue Earth County attorney, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The state is asking the court today to overturn the decision of the district court. That decision suppressed evidence obtained through two different search warrants and dismissed all of the charges against respondent Kane Walterman.
Do you agree, Ms. DeVos, that really this kind of hinges on what happens with the first search warrant, whereas if the first search warrant was no good, then there really wasn't anything to independently support the second search warrant. And so I'm getting at, should we really be concentrating on the validity of the first search warrant here from your perspective?
I do agree with that. Correct. The great majority of the information contained in the second warrant stemmed from items that were obtained in the first warrant. So that's correct.
Thank you.
As the court's aware, on a pretrial appeal, when the state appeals from a pretrial order, of course, the court requires that the state show critical impact. There's no question that there's critical impact here. I don't think that's in dispute. All of the charges against Mr. Walterman were dismissed. So moving on to the error, in this case, the state is here to show that based on the totality of the circumstances, the district court erred when it overturned or it determined that those warrants should be suppressed. And again, we are primarily focusing on the first warrant, but the second warrant stems from the first warrant. Although there must be a nexus between the alleged criminal activity and the location that was searched, that can be determined by the totality of the circumstances. And there's great deference given to the initial warrant issuing judge's decision.
That leads me to a question. What is our standard of review when we're reviewing the district court's dismissal or, you know, suppression order and dismissal? And I know there's this underlying, we need to defer to the issuing magistrate, but what's our standard of review with respect to the district court's order?
Your Honor, your standard of review is not a standard of, it's not a de novo review either. It's a review that gives great deference to the discretion of the district court, or the, in this case, it was a district court judge, but the warrant issuing judge, correct. So it's the same standard. In this case, the facts were such that on July 10th of 2018, a Mr. James Ryan was driving Kane Walterman's vehicle. He was stopped by Blue Earth County Sheriff's Lieutenant Brennan outside of Amboy, Minnesota. While he was driving that vehicle, he was pulled over, as I indicated. Mr. Ryan told the lieutenant that he had just left Mr. Walterman's home and that he was buying this vehicle, a truck, for Mr. Walterman. While they were having their conversation on the side of the road, Lieutenant Brennan noticed an interesting rock in the cup holder of the vehicle, asked Mr. Ryan about it. Mr. Ryan lifted it up, and Lieutenant Brennan noted two glass pipes with some burnt residue, crystal-like residue that Lieutenant Brennan, former member of the Drug Task Force, noted to be pipes that were generally used in narcotics.
And everything you're saying here is in the four corners of the warrant, because there was no independent evidence provided at the time of the signing of the warrant, was there, in addition to what the affidavit said?
Not to my knowledge. It was all contained in the four corners of the warrant. Based on that, Lieutenant Brennan decided to expand the stop, asked Mr. Ryan to exit the vehicle. While Mr. Ryan is outside the vehicle, Mr. Walterman appeared on the scene. Mr. Walterman confirmed that it was his vehicle and that Mr. Ryan was buying it. In fact, asked Lieutenant Brennan if he could take the vehicle with him. At that point, Lieutenant Brennan hadn't searched the vehicle any further. Of course, he denied that request for Mr. Walterman to take the vehicle and instead continued the search, found a backpack in the inside the vehicle that contained over 30 grams of methamphetamine, scales, other paraphernalia.
So You know, I don't know that there's a lot of dispute, and there can't be much dispute on the facts because we're stuck, everybody's talking about the four corners of the warrant. So I don't know that a detailed recitation of those facts is the best way to use your time here. What I'm interested in is, and you may disagree with that, but what I'm interested in terms of the facts in the four corners of the warrant is your position on what facts you think create the nexus between what was found in the pickup and what occurred during that time as described in the warrant and the search of the respondent's residence here.
Thank you, and you're correct. All the facts aren't necessary, but some of them are. And those facts, as I mentioned, are the fact that it was Mr. Walterman's vehicle. There was methamphetamine found in that vehicle. The other fact is that Mr. Ryan indicated that he had left Mr. Walterman's home. Mr. Walterman's home is in Amboy, according to the four corners of the warrant, which indicate his address. The stop was just outside of Amboy. So it's a fairly recent in time event. The fact that Mr. Walterman stopped there indicating he not only sold him the vehicle, or he said he was selling him the vehicle, his name is still in the title, he's still interested in the vehicle. In fact, he asked to take it with him, and there was methamphetamine that they had yet to discover in that vehicle. So that's the connection in that it was Mr. Walterman's vehicle, which had left his home. The home, presumably, is where Mr. Walterman lives. There's no question, no dispute about that. At this point, the warrant was based upon all of that information that was obtained during the stop of Mr. Ryan, including the information that Mr. Walterman stopped and that the vehicle was his and that there was methamphetamine found inside that vehicle.
But there's nothing that indicates the backpack belonged to Mr. Walterman, was there?
There isn't any indication. No, there isn't. That's correct. However, he did ask to take the vehicle, and the vehicle, again, did contain that evidence. So the warrant itself indicates that. It also indicates Mr. Walterman's, the agent's knowledge of Mr. Walterman's criminal history, their information from confidential informants.
So what's the nexus to the house?
The nexus to the house is the fact that he was at the house and Mr. Walterman's vehicle left the house.
So
from that we should infer that he was buying, he got the drugs at the house and put them in the car?
Well, that could be one inference. We don't necessarily need to get there that he was buying it from him. Could also be the fact that Mr. Walterman put them in there's lots of theories as to how they could have gotten there. But the vehicle came from the house. There was methamphetamine in the house. This isn't a case similar to Kahn. I know that is something that respondent has pointed out repeatedly, the Kahn case back from 1996. My understanding of that case is that was an individual found in Minneapolis, found with an ounce of cocaine. No nexus whatsoever to him coming and going from his own home. The home that was searched was over 75 miles away from the incident. This was a incident.
So we should be focusing on the fact that the volume of drugs was so much greater, and that would indicate they could only come from the house?
No, I'm not suggesting that, Your Honor. I'm suggesting that it's a different set of facts. Those facts, there was really nothing to connect it. The nexus doesn't have to be great. There just has to be some nexus. And there is great deference given to the warrant-issuing judge. We reviewed all of this. It's not to be essentially nitpicked afterwards. They're just supposed to make a practical, common-sense decision based on all of the evidence before them. That was what was done here.
The judge seemed to take some exception to what I'll call sloppy drafting of the affidavit in the warrant by not including the dates of the prior convictions, not including dates of these alleged anonymous citizen complaints, and found some significance to those lapses in the drafting in terms of whether or not the judge felt there was probable cause for the warrant. You know, what are we to make of those findings by the court?
I'm not here to say, Your Honor, that the district court's comments aren't something that could be taken into consideration and something that should or could be done differently in another case. The case before the court today is simply whether it was enough. Could it have been done differently? Certainly it could have been done differently. But again, based on what there was in the four corners of the warrant, there was enough. So additional information could always be helpful. But based on that, the issuing judge, the issuing warrant issuing judge could have asked for additional information from the agent, certainly could have asked for additional details, didn't feel it was necessary. And it's not giving deference to that warrant issuing judge's decision for the district court to come in after the fact, look at it later and say, well, we could have had more detail. Of course we could have had more detail. They could have more detail in probably every case. So I won't say it couldn't have been done differently, but in this case it was enough. This court has recognized, and the Supreme Court has recognized, that even doubtful or marginal cases must be determined with a preference for giving warrants and for executing those and giving that deference that's required. The second warrant, as courts already indicated, was based on evidence that was found in Mr. Walterman's house during the execution of the first warrant. That was the methamphetamine that was found in three different baggies in different locations within the house. There were sort of unusual places and new information that the officers had received from the mother of one of Mr. Walterman's children, who had identified a secret compartment that he had told her about building in a part of the house that was being renovated. Officers in the home confirmed that a portion of the house, the bedroom that she had discussed, was being renovated. It matched the story that she gave. They requested a second warrant based on the information they obtained in the first warrant.
But this woman didn't say anything about what that compartment was being used for. I mean, it could have been used to store weapons. I mean, I don't know. Why is it okay to take the leap that that was being used to conceal drugs?
In the four corners of the warrant, that's correct. That is all it says. However, it is relevant for the court to take into consideration the training and experience of those that present the warrant. In this case, the agent that presented the warrant indicated that, based on his training and knowledge, that individuals sometimes hide controlled substances. They indicated that they had found the other evidence in the home in, I believe they used the term, I can't recall whether it was unusual or hidden locations.
Unusual places.
Yep. And so given that information, the fact that they had just been in the home, in fact, they held the site so they could control it until they came back with a second warrant. It was not out of the realm of belief that there could be additional drugs found in that location. And given this person's knowledge of Mr. Walterman, she said she had just been in the home, as my understanding. You're correct. It doesn't say anywhere that what she believed was in that compartment. Your Honors, then I am just asking the court to look to the deference that should be given to the warrant issuing judges. I would ask this court to determine today that the district court did err when it decided that it was necessary to suppress the evidence that was contained or obtained through those two warrants, and ask the court to overturn the court's decision or the district court's decision dismissing all charges against Mr. Walterman. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, representing respondent Kane Walterman. To answer the court's question, page 5 of my brief indicates the standard of review upon a pretrial order being appealed on motion to suppress evidence. This court must review the district court's factual findings under a clearly erroneous standard and the district court's legal determinations de novo.
So we give no deference to the issuing magistrate?
I think that what they're discussing here is that you do give deference to the issuing magistrate, but the district court's legal determination would be the order suppressing that is reviewed de novo. But I think that the case law is clear that you do give deference to the issuing court, and I think that the district court did that as well. I would submit that reversing the district court order to suppress would be creating new law, namely that the residents of recent associates that may have undated prior felonies by people who are using or possessing drugs, those residents are now somehow subject to search if there have been recent associates. A few things that are important for this court to focus in on in my request to have this order affirmed. First, law enforcement's contact with James Ryan, who is the driver of the vehicle, which was registered to my client but being purchased by Ryan, followed a routine traffic stop. There was no ongoing investigation involving Ryan. It appears there had been some social media or anonymous concerned citizen tips involving some of the people in play here, including my client. But there was no observations of Ryan coming or going to controlled buys, no phone calls with CIs where drugs were going to be delivered. And these are all the cases that are cited in my brief. You know, entry of a home after picking up drugs, that's brash. Exiting a home, Yaritz, going to a prearranged controlled buy. While those are cases where there's inferences that are drawn without direct observations being made by individuals that there's drugs in the home, those are such strong inferences. And those inferences are just not present in the fact pattern before this court.
But we do have drugs found in a vehicle that your client still owns and that your client, in fact, tried to get back. I mean, that seems to me a significant point.
So,
and a way that ties this vehicle and this drug evidence directly to your client.
I would respond to say that, number one, when you're selling a vehicle and you're not yet fully paid, you keep the title in your name. Even after you transfer a title, that title doesn't come back from the state in the name of the new buyer for months at
end. Any of that in the four corners of the warrant?
No, but what is in the four corners of the warrant is that law enforcement learned that the vehicle was being purchased by Ryan or had been purchased by Ryan, and payments were still owed, but it was still registered to the respondent, Walterman. Now, one of the things about what's found in the vehicle that needs to be focused upon is that this is not a drug wholesale case. The paraphernalia found in that backpack shows that there was a history of use by the person who had that backpack.
What about the digital scale?
Once again, people who buy drugs want to make sure that they're buying a correct amount of drugs. And even if Ryan intended to share or split some of that off at some point in time, what's key here is that we're not talking about packaging that is concealed in a vehicle or otherwise shows that it's being wholesaled, as in Novak, where you've got this, you know, pounds of marijuana. What we're talking about in this backpack is basically a drug user's kit. Glass pipes with burnt residue.
Doesn't the investigating officer who applied for the search warrant make a statement that this is more than the amount of methamphetamine found in this backpack was more than what is typically associated with individual personal use?
I think that case law indicates, I don't know how, we don't have any testimony about how much drugs a person can use. To me, that's like, I would make the analogy, maybe strained, possessing a case of beer is way more than you drink in one night. That doesn't mean you intend to resell it. He's got enough drugs to use probably for a couple weeks if he's a daily user. It's once again, without more, we can speculate that. And I think the officer drafting the warrant was speculating that, well, he might be reselling this. The question is, to the court's point during arguments by appellant, when did he get it? When did he have it?
What's the nexus to your client's home? And why isn't it, you know, the car is coming from your client's home. Your client has a criminal history of selling drugs, among other things. There have been complaints about activities at that home that your appellant, that your client has in Amboy, from which this vehicle that has methamphetamine in it has just left.
It certainly offers speculation. I would say that, number one, in other cases, they would need to see, for example, Ryan walking out of that house. Ryan said he had come from the residence. He didn't say he was in the residence, and there was no observations going on at that residence to say he had come out of the residence. So if he goes to the house to drop off an envelope with money for paying a payment on the truck, there's a lot of innocent explanations for that. But also, that truck had not been seen at that residence recently. It had not been noted by law enforcement to be involved in any kind of controlled substance activities of late. This is a routine traffic stop with a person who is using drugs. How many houses did he go to prior to that? Are we going to search every house he's been at for the past week? I mean, that is the house that he said he came from, but there's no evidence that he came out of that house. And if there was evidence that he had come out of that house on his way to a controlled buy, then you'd have Novak, or you'd have Yaritz, and you'd have that nexus. But this is a routine traffic stop, and it's not a drug wholesaler. So the drug wholesale cases are the ones that really talk about that, you know, those inferences. The Yarborough case is important, I think, for this court. And that case is obviously a published opinion. That involved, once again, it was circumstantial evidence that the gun and drugs may be found at the residence where the unique purple car being driven by the defendant in that case was parked at. However, there was eyewitness information that Yarborough had recently been involved in drug robberies and had brandished a gun, and that this court found and the Supreme Court found that the totality of those circumstances lended itself to circumstantial evidence of nexus, that evidence of a crime would be found in that residence, but none of those things are present here. Specifically, that this phone call from concerned citizens or even the ex-wife, Mosenden, she's talking about this compartment. She said she's recently been in the house. She didn't see any drugs in the house.
You know, yeah, I think the second warrant is out if the first warrant's out, so I don't know that we need to spend a whole lot of time on that, and I don't think that Ms. DeVos really disagreed with that. My question is, and I'm glad you mentioned the Yarborough case, because, you know, that did establish for us that in the issuance of a warrant, and this is from our Supreme Court, so obviously we're going to follow that. The standard is probable cause exists when there is a fair probability that contraband will be found in the place to be searched. So when we're looking at the totality of the circumstances, then on that fair probability standard that the trial court had to apply, when we consider the fact that this was appellant's truck, the officer was told that Mr. Ryan had just come from there, that the appellant showed up at the scene of this traffic stop, and as Judge Bjorkman said, tried to take possession of the truck and the drugs that were in the truck, that the officer stated in the warrant that these were large amount of drugs not normally associated with personal use, and that your client has, or the appellant has, numerous convictions for drug sales. Where does that not amount to? I mean, I want to understand your position why that would not create a fair probability that these drugs, that a search of your client's residence, there wasn't a fair probability that that would produce evidence of contraband.
It is obviously the devil's in the details, right? Yeah. And this is a unique fact pattern, once again, that there is no case law on point that says that associating with someone, even when you have a criminal past, you're associating with someone who's clearly using drugs, that means that drugs are in your house. There is no indication that Walterman had done anything illegal recently.
There may be a history, and once again, from the forewarns, the application, we have no idea when that history occurred. We know it was somewhere in the past. There's no information that there's any identified concerned citizens that have seen him do anything wrong. There are how many millions of people that have felonies in their past? And if they associate with family members, with other individuals that are possessing drugs and using drugs, is there reason to suspect that there's drugs to be found in that house? Drugs are everywhere. They're ubiquitous.
And I echo Judge Bjorkman's comment before, it just seems to me one of the factors that could arguably set this case aside a little bit is the fact that, as you say, this was a traffic stop, yet the appellant shows up at the traffic stop on a vehicle that you've argued has been purchased and just all the payments haven't been made, yet he wants to take possession of the truck, which includes the drugs that are yet to be discovered. That seems to be a significant fact that's that relates to nexus, and why would I be wrong about that?
I believe this is in the search warrant application. Without looking, I have to rely on my memory, that James Ryan, had already been taken out of that vehicle, had already been handcuffed and pat-frisked, and basically placed under arrest for what was seen in plain view.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. That my client then shows up, once again, this traffic stop has taken some time, but cell phones are available. Obviously, there may be an interest, knowing that there is tow fees, potential costs involved. You know, my client is owed money. He's got an interest. Any lien holder shows up and says, hey, that I'm not paid for that fully yet. I'd like to take the vehicle. Now, why my client, knowing that there's drugs in the vehicle, would want to take possession of it when he has nothing to do with those drugs? It's not his backpack. It's not his vehicle, quote unquote. I think that shows that he didn't know there was drugs in that vehicle, perhaps. I mean, why would you want to?
Alternatively, he knew there was, and they were worth a lot of money, and he didn't want the cops to get them.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the deference that we give to the issuing magistrate. So, I mean, I understand there might be alternative explanations, and the ones you've given are very reasonable. But I don't know that negates the fair probability standard on probable cause for the issuance of the warrant.
The residence,
anyway.
Sure. The residence is the most protected spot we have in our society. And the case law, why wouldn't it be reasonable to believe that Khan has drugs in his house? He's driving around Minneapolis with a dealer's amount. Of course he's got drugs in his house, right? That's the place he's going to keep them, kind of like we talked about with the court talked about with Yarborough. Where would Yarborough keep a gun? In his house. So, you know, drugs could be kept anywhere. It is pure speculation upon conjecture, upon inference, that house is where drugs can be found. And our spider senses can be tingling, but that doesn't mean that you get in a house. There needs to be more. I saw Ryan walk out of the house. That car, that truck has been seen at drug buys. There's been a lot of activity at that house. We've surveilled that house. We've done garbage pulls. We've done controlled by anything to connect that house with drugs in the recent past. There's nothing here other than the conduct of a guy who's apparently buying a vehicle from my client.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. DeVos, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd just like to point out that Mr. Kelly has gone a bit beyond the four corners of the warrant, and just to let the court know, there's nothing that I can see in the warrant that mentions that the payments are all done or that the paperwork is just waiting to come through. There's nothing in there about that. In fact, Mr. Walterman, there is something in the warrant about the fact that Mr. Walterman arrived on scene to provide Lieutenant Brennan with a proof of insurance for the vehicle. So he's actually not just waiting for the paperwork to come through. So I want the court to be aware of that. There's also nothing in the second warrant, and I know we're not spending time on that, but I do want to point it out because Mr. Kelly said that the mother of Mr. Walterman's child said she didn't know anything about any drugs in that compartment. It doesn't say anything about that. It doesn't say one way or the other.
It doesn't suggest that there were drugs either.
Correct. It's silent. And I just want to point out, because that is a distinct difference between being silent and saying she hasn't seen any drugs in the house. I don't know whether they asked her. It's not in the warrant. So, again, the four corners of the warrant are relevant to both the state and the defense. The defense can't go beyond it either. And so to add all of these other hypotheticals, they're just not there. There isn't any information that Mr. Walterman's truck hasn't been seen at his residence anytime lately. That's not in the warrant. That's something Mr. Kelly added. So I want to point out that the court just needs to give deference to the issuing court or the issuing judge, the information that was before the issuing judge and the issuing judge's decision, common sense decision. That issuing judge can also give deference to individuals such as the agent that provided the information. The veracity and basis of knowledge of that person, and the agent that applied did indicate that based on his training and experience, methamphetamine weighing approximately 33.6 grams is more than normal personal use. And that was based on experience. That's something that this court has recognized is the issuing judge can look at the veracity and knowledge of the agent that is supplying the information for the warrant. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you both for your helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.